Hey, it's the Football Diary podcast. Welcome back. It's Arsenal-Liverpool in the big encounter this weekend. And Arsenal once again go back to the top of the table, beating Liverpool 3-2 to kind of outline their title credentials even more, whilst Liverpool have fallen so far away from the title. It's unreal, isn't it? Jurgen Klopp's actually said that it's laughable. I think he laughed out loud when a reporter suggested that the title race might still be on. And I think that's a fair assumption, isn't it, Miles? They defensively, once again, were absolutely abject, weren't they?
Yeah, they're completely out of the conversation now. I mean, not only did they lose to Arsenal, who really are setting the pace at the top of the league, Man City continue to look electrifying, and they just look so poor. They look so disorganised, and all the things that we've seen Liverpool do successfully over the last 4 years in particular, they're just gone, it seems. They look like they're short of ideas. They look like they're not sure how to stop what's happening to them. They're not sure how to create things for themselves, and that's not what we would attribute to this Liverpool side normally. So yeah, very poor out in for them, really.
It's mad, isn't it? Dave, you've had a lot to say in the past about Liverpool's defensive frailties this season. I think we all have, but how did they lose this game? Because from minute one, Arsenal sliced them apart, didn't they? And Trent just looked all over the place.
Yeah, that first move from Arsenal was, you know, it summed up really the game and how electrifying that first move was. Some of the football that Arsenal are playing at the minute is brilliant, and it's, I don't want to criticise Klopp too much because of what he's done, you know, at Liverpool. You know. he's got so much credit to his name, really, credit in the bank, you've got to say. But it almost seems like he's doing an experiment, the same experiment, and getting the same results every single time and not changing anything. That seemed like a naive setup for me.
He started the game with such an attacking lineup. He had four forward players on. He clearly wanted the win to try and build some confidence. When he got to 2-2, he took all his attacking players off and brought defensive players on and decided, I'm not going to go for the win anymore. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like Klopp really knows what he wants. It's like he thinks, right, I'm going to go hell for leather and ignore the fact that my defence is so bad. And then when the defence is playing bad, he's like, oh, okay, let's just do more of that.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's a strange one because he played the same system he played against Rangers, I think, in the European Cup, and it was an odd one to play against this Liverpool, this Arsenal team that, you know, was guaranteed to score goals against them with that setup, wasn't they? Like you said, it was almost kind of like so vulnerable to the counter. And tactically, Miles, what did you see that made Liverpool look so frail? Because they were so susceptible to counters from Arsenal, weren't they, for the whole game?
Quite a lot, to be honest. And I hate to keep going on about the same person because I feel like I've said it repeatedly now for weeks. But I said to my father-in-law before the game started, it will all depend on whether Arsenal can exploit that space behind Trent Alexander-Arnold and get Martinelli in at the back post. It happened twice and they scored both times. It was so obvious. The first goal, he was just completely given the freedom of the left-hand side. He ran in behind the Liverpool defence without any of them seeming to notice he was there and tucked it away very nicely. And then for Saka's first goal, the way that he picks the ball up out wide, Trent somehow has found himself at centre back, goes to cover the right back position, but just keeps going. I thought he was going to run off the pitch because Martinelli checked inside and Trent just ran straight past him. He didn't even look like he was trying to put a tackle in. He wasn't blocking any passes. He wasn't stopping Martinelli from running into space. He just kept going. And his decision-making is completely letting Liverpool down at the moment. Not just him, to be honest. Their midfield looks incredibly weak, whereas Arsenal's looks a lot stronger. Their wide players just aren't getting involved in the game the way that they used to. And it's really noticeable that Liverpool aren't having the same success. And I think we can attribute it to two players in particular. You can look at Trent and his defensive performance, but you can look at Salah up front. Salah is a different player this season. Yeah. And Liverpool, I think, are failing to involve him in the game as much as they used to. So he only played 70 minutes of this game, which is mental to me. When you're seeking a win, the fact that Liverpool would think to take Salah off at 70 minutes, it says everything about where he's at currently. This season, he's averaging 0.25 goals a game. Last season, he was averaging 0.66 goals a game. Season before, 0.59. It's a massive drop-off. We're talking about less than 50% of what he was getting last season. His involvement in the game is disappearing. I looked, and in the 70 minutes he played, he touched the ball 27 times. So they're failing to involve him in the game. Last season, when Liverpool beat Arsenal 2-0 at the Emirates, he didn't even start the game. He came on for the last 30 minutes. He touched the ball 25 times. So in half the amount of time, he was involved in the game just as much. When they beat him 4-0 at Anfield last season, he touched the ball 52 times, scored. He was involved in the game. But they're not getting him involved anymore. And when they are, he releases the ball so quickly that we're not seeing Salah do what Salah's really good at, taking on defenders, cutting inside, trying to find that left foot.
It's quite worrying, really. It was barely noticeable within that first half. Luis Diaz looked like their brightest player. Yeah. Even he didn't have probably the best of games, but it's hard to find positives at the minute. I think they look better going forward than they have recently. But what does that say? Like, that's not really. I wouldn't say that's praise as such. They just didn't look. They've not looked as bad in this game. I thought both sides looked vulnerable at the back. Both look like they could see goals, to be honest.
The only defence you can level for Liverpool is really they should have had a penalty by this season's laws. Now, none of us think that's a penalty, really. None of us like that law, I think, I would say. The ball is very close to Gabriel when it's released, but his arm is up, it hits his arm. And if you're not giving that, why are you then giving Dan Burns one? I mean, I think the Dan Burn one was definitely a penalty because he's 6'7" and his arm's above his head. So it's definitely a handball. But Gabriel's arm is up. It hits his hand. So it probably could have been a penalty. Yeah. Arsenal's penalty was soft. So on a different day, it could have been 3-2 the other way around. Who knows? But the way their midfield is playing at the moment really lacks purpose. They've brought in different midfielders. They brought in Thiago, who's meant to be really efficient and good on the ball and playing these balls in, but they're not involving their wide players. The only successful player right now for them really is Firmino, who seems to have stepped up since Nunes has come in. But they didn't start him in this game, which was an odd choice, I thought. Instead, they started four other forwards. It's just, I can't really know what Liverpool are trying to do at the moment. It's about an experiment, but what do they want to achieve right now? Have they got an 11 that looks consistent and looks like they are all on the same wavelength? Because I don't think they do.
I thought the decision to play Nunez was a strange one.
Do you think he was the wrong signing, Nunez? Because Liverpool's success for ages has come from how good their wide forwards have been and the ability for Mane and Salah to cut inside. And now they're trying to play the ball into the middle a lot more. Has that almost nullified Salah and Diaz to a degree? I know Diaz is a bit brighter.
I think it's definitely made them a little bit more predictable because their kind of strength in the past has been their unpredictability. Mane, you couldn't tell what he was going to do next. The interchange between the forward line has always been one of their great strengths, really. At the moment, they look slow. They didn't look very quick on the break. Mm-hmm. They look quite pedestrian and predictable for Arsenal to deal with. And I know we said Arsenal had their own sort of defensive frailties as well, but for the most part, I thought they dealt with Liverpool quite comfortably. And yeah, it's just that edge that they used to have has gone a little bit. This, what do they call it? Rock and roll football or heavy metal football, he called it when he first came to England. That's like a thing in the past now, based on what they've been playing like.
I don't really see what they're thinking, especially they're playing, you know, 100 million euros for a player that you don't pay that sort of money for somebody to sit on the bench every single week. But then you've also got Jota, Diaz and Salah, which as a front three is a lot more flexible, a lot more interchangeable, and more of what we've seen from Liverpool over the last few years, when obviously Mane was a staple of that front three as well. So it's such a huge change from what we're used to seeing from them.
Klopp has built this Liverpool team on quite a small budget comparative to the rest of the elite clubs in the Premier League. The one time he spent really big has been on a player that we're now questioning whether that's the most beneficial thing he could have done. So you have to question that. Why? Why was Nunes the one, and what's he going to do long term?
It seems like there's a phased plan of change at Liverpool, and it's going to take a few transfer windows for anything to happen of significance, because this is probably one piece of his long-term puzzle and the club's long-term puzzle to replace these players that are aging, and that's Nunes is step one. But like you say, for that kind of money, you probably could have got a couple of very good players for the midfield, for example, or for the defence. And they've not. Yeah. They've gone for the forward, where they were still fairly strong. I think, like you said, they've got a decent set of forward players, haven't they? So maybe Liverpool are evolving. I think Klopp's post-match interviews lately have been so negative and lacking any kind of enthusiasm and energy. I don't know, mentally, he seems like he's kind of clocked out a little bit as well. He's conceding defeat in the title race already.
Their whole talk over the summer was the reason they weren't investing in their midfield was because they were waiting until next year for Bellingham. Yeah. If they, let's say they don't qualify for the Champions League this season, which is perfectly reasonable with the way they're playing. If Villa win tonight, Liverpool go into the bottom half. Villa are playing bottom of the league Forest. So it's possible that nearly 10 games in, Liverpool are already, what, 14 points behind Arsenal? So it's very possible that they won't get to the Champions League. And then at that point, if you're Bellingham, he's going to have a lot of suitors. Liverpool won't be the only one. All of a sudden, you're not refreshing the midfield in the middle.
Yeah, I think if they lose against City at the weekend, I think they can go as low as 16th in the table.
It's crazy.
That begs the question then, guys. Dave, I'll start with you while I'm on you. What is Liverpool's level now? I mean, is this just a blip or is this the start of something that needs to change quite dramatically, do you think?
It's been going on too long to be a blip for me. I think there's a realisation there, and I think there's a realisation within the fan base that there's going to be needed to be a rebuild throughout the team. They've gone from being, a few years ago, being one of the youngest first 11s to having, I think, the second oldest first 11. In the league, which is crazy, really. Like you mentioned, there's so many players in there now that were big performers now that they look a shadow of themselves, and that's, for me, is worrying. They need an injection of new blood, it looks like, new faces in that squad. And the only thing is, are they going to get the investment that they need? Because, you know, if the investment they made during the summer wasn't enough.
I've got a feeling they should have cashed in on Salah this season.
What, you know, was that a mistake giving him that contract? Because, I mean, it's hard to say, isn't it? Because he had such a good season last year.
A big contract gets handed out after a great season. Or to be honest, with Salah, it's more than a great season. It's been years of fantastic football at Liverpool. But then that new contract, it's happened before. Look at Aubameyang, the year that he won the FA Cup for Arsenal, basically, and they gave him that massive contract, and then he's gone because he completely packed it in, really. It's not the only example. We see it quite often, and I do wonder whether, are we just seeing the end of this cycle with Liverpool?
I think so.
And it's so weird because we're only in October. This last season, they won the FA Cup, they won the League Cup, they got to the Champions League final, and really, on the final day of the season, they were a goal away from winning the Premier League. So we could call it four finals. And then a few months later, we're talking about them and going, well, they're not going to qualify for the Champions League at this rate. And what do they need to do to completely rebuild? You shouldn't be rebuilding that quickly after that much success. So something bigger is wrong, it seems to me.
I think so. Well, we'll try and move on to Arsenal, really, because they deserve a massive amount of credit once again for putting on another performance against another very difficult opposition. Yeah. I'm running out of like superlatives to say about Arsenal at the moment. They've got so much strength in their squad, in their first 11 especially, and they all perform brilliantly. Again, the attacking interplay has been fantastic to watch. Dave, what's been your highlight of this Arsenal team from not just the Liverpool game, but so far this season?
I've got to highlight Tomiyasu for this game because I thought he was brilliant. You know, not just defensively, but going forward. He just offers them so much more of a balance. I know he's obviously missed a few games and been out with, you know, an injury over the last couple of months. But the way he played epitomised them as a team. They, you know, showed plenty of courage. That's the main thing for me. We've said about Arsenal not having the bottle in the past, and they've shown in these big games, even against United, obviously, they didn't get the result, but they showed that they can play, that they've got the courage to play and go for it. And that's not really happened in the past. They've not had the steel, the metal to get themselves over the line. That's the biggest difference for me, is the mentality seems to have changed massively. It's hard to say what it is, but something is obviously clicked, you know, in the summer. There was a few wins at the start of the season. We wondered whether they were peter off, We've seen it happen to Arsenal in the past where they've had a really strong start to the season. I feel like this winter period after the World Cup will be a real eye-opener whether, you know, they can go on and maintain this level of performance, because we've seen them have these sort of seasons before and drop off. It's just whether they can continue that now. There's obviously some young players in that team as well, probably lack a bit of experience. So we'll probably look to some of the more experienced members of the squad to kind of, you know, drag them through tough patches, because, you know, it's hard not to get carried away, I'm sure, as an Arsenal fan at the moment. But if they can get top four, that'll be a really good achievement for them and go far in a couple of the cup competitions, because you've got to be realistic at the end of the day. The City team that at the top there are just another level. It's almost like they're scoring the same number of goals they did last year, but then he's also finishing the chances off.
David, it's almost like you knew where I was going next after this, because I wanted to segue nicely into City. To be honest, the disrespect shown to Arsenal, they're top of the league, mate. You know, they need a bit more respect than you're giving them in some ways. But Pep Guardiola has said that Arsenal are the better team, of course, at the moment in this season, because the table doesn't lie. Miles, you have got loads of praise for City, especially after their 4-0 win against Southampton. So many players, again, performing at the top of their game. What did you make of them? And who are the title favourites? Is it still City now, or are Arsenal a little bit closer than they were before this weekend in your eyes?
I definitely can't wait for that game. I cannot wait for the Arsenal-City game. And it's so interesting when you consider that Arteta has come from City, gone to Arsenal. So there's that narrative. Yeah. Arsenal have bought Jesus and Zinchenko from City, which might end up biting City on the backside a little bit. And actually, a testament to what Dave's saying about Arsenal, that resilience. There was a period in the first half, just after Nunes' goal, where Liverpool did have the ball a lot more. They looked like they were going to push through it. And an Arsenal of old would have crumbled. Instead, Saka scores before half-time, and they take control of the game again. That's really interesting when you compare them to City, because City are playing such fantastic football. I watched the City game this weekend, and I have no interest in Man City at all. If anything, I probably dislike them. But I have not enjoyed watching a game of football that much for a really long time, because it was just, they're so good to watch. It's beautiful football. And I almost felt for Southampton, because I don't know what you do to stop them. I know, obviously, like we talk about, Newcastle have got a point from them, Villa have got a point from them this season. You probably wouldn't expect that. But in this game, I watched it and really tried to empathise with the defending team, because you now have Haaland. You have to try and stop him. He's coming off the back of 3 home hat-tricks. What do you do? So Southampton put men on him, tried to do everything they could to shut him out, and were fairly successful at doing that for a period. There's a problem with that. They focused on him, and it freed up Foden and Mahrez, 2 outstanding footballers. The form Phil Foden is in right now, cannot wait to see him play at the World Cup for England. I hope he starts every game. He looks incredible. Then you think, okay, push your fullbacks deeper, try and watch those runs. Great. You've stopped the front 3. Well done. Only problem is their left back is a better attacking player than anyone else in the Premier League has got. He was unbelievable to watch in this game. I loved watching Cancelo. His goal was fantastic. He took it so well. There was a moment in the first half as well where I think Bernardo Silva played a ball in for him, and he ran onto it and crossed it in first time with the outside of his right foot onto Mahrez's toe. Mahrez's first touch is the best in the Premier League by some. The way he kills a ball dead, you know, if you put it anywhere near him, he's got it. And watching it, I just sat going, this is the best football we've ever seen in the Premier League. I genuinely think it might be. Yet they're not top. But there is frailty there. There definitely is. And Southampton were woeful. Yeah. Every time they got the ball, they probably put 5 passes together, then lost it. I haven't looked at the possession stats, but honestly, if you told me that Man City had 95% possession, I wouldn't have even batted an eyelid. They just have so much talent, and the way that they pass the ball around, it just seems like Man City are able to pass the ball into a space in a way that's not physically possible. They curve the ball around the opposing players and put it into a space where they know an attacking player is going to be. And they're so patient in their build-up that, like I say, you just draw Southampton players to the best Man City attackers. But the problem is you always leave space for one of the Man City attackers, and he's good enough to absolutely kill the game. Doesn't matter who it is. De Bruyne, Silva, Foden, Mahrez, Haaland, Cancelo, any of them in this game. Even Akanji was getting forward at right back. It was incredible. Yeah, I don't know how you stop City this year.
I thought you were saying the level of intricacy and the technical ability to execute the kind of passes they're doing, to control the kind of passes they're doing, to thread the kind of balls they're putting through. Foden's goal as well, amazingly taken. Sort of a dink, you know, very difficult to pull off. Haaland hit the post, didn't he? And I think there was almost a feeling at some point that this isn't going to be his day, and yet he pops up and scores when he's not really been as involved as he normally is. So
I try not to see much of them, to be honest. I mean, what a lot of what we were saying, we've been saying for the last couple of years, haven't we, is they need a plan B. Like, they've lacked that striker. Now they've got him. In the past, we've seen them when things aren't going their way. They throw Laporte up there, sort of operating them zones as a striker. They don't need to do that anymore. And yeah, Miles is summed it up perfectly in that there's so many talented players in there. If you're solely focusing on marking Haaland out of the game, then you're ultimately going to suffer at some stage. You almost need to be 100% perfect throughout the whole game.
Yeah,
and it's almost like that. It's going to have to be an ultra pragmatic approach in how a team is going to have to set up, especially, you know, we mentioned this Arsenal team, and I'm sure it will be. You know, who better than Arteta to know how to kind of expose the frailties in this City team, knowing exactly how Guardiola wants to play his game. You watch it, don't you? It's infuriating when your team's playing against Man City. If you finally get the ball, they're swarming around. As soon as they lose that ball, they're straight on you. It's so impressive to watch, infuriating as a rival fan. But yeah, you can only admire it.
It's a really good point. Like Foden in particular, the way he presses. And Bernardo Silva was the other one that I really noticed. Bernardo Silva played a little bit deeper in the midfield in this game to allow De Bruyne space to go forward. But it seemed that no matter where Southampton won the ball back, he was the first player on them. He was everywhere. And now that City team has the best passer of the ball in world football in Kevin De Bruyne and the best finisher in world football in Haaland. I'd say maybe the best crosser of the ball in Cancelo. The most energy in Phil Foden and Bernardo Silva. Yeah. They're just excellent at everything. So defensively, actually, is Nathan Ake the best centre-back in the world? No. Diaz has gone in and out of the team. Akanji ended up playing right-back in this game. So they should be a bit frailer, but you have to get to that area of the pitch first. Yeah. And then teams are just really struggling. I feel like I come on here every week and say that another manager's about to be sacked, but Hasenhüttl will lose his job this week.
Yeah,
surely.
I think he's close. I saw a tweet that I just want to read out as well. Somebody saying, Pep's so bored of strolling the Premier League that he's literally made himself a challenger in Arteta and given him a couple of quality players to get them going. Fair play. So I thought that was quite funny. Yeah. Moving off from City, because we could talk about the way they play for a while. And we have actually zoomed in on City quite a lot this season, which, you know, for me and Dave's hard to do. But credit where it's due. They are challenging Arsenal. Or are Arsenal challenging City? Who knows? They're both fascinating teams to watch. And I think when they do come together and play each other, it'll be amazing to see. And I can't wait for that game. It's going to be pretty mouthwatering.
Listen, you can be upset that we're praising City so often, but we just spent the first however long of the podcast talking about how bad That's Liverpool great. Are. So swings and roundabouts for you too, I guess.
I was going to say, I want to entertain the idea of the way Newcastle are playing at the moment next, just because it's been a good year now, isn't it, since the Saudi takeover, and the team is unrecognisable from what it was a year ago. A few core players are still there, and they're actually improved under Eddie Howe, which is great to see. And I think it's probably fitting on the week that Steve Bruce loses his job as West Brom manager as well to discuss how far Newcastle have come since the Steve Bruce days. Miles, they absolutely steamrolled this game 5-1, and Bruno Guimaraes looks amazing. They've got a few players like Kieran Trippier who seem to be playing out of their skin. It's a very good-looking team at the moment, isn't it, Newcastle? And again, the contrast to a year ago is so stark. What kind of system is Eddie Howe trying to employ here? Because it's coming together quite nicely now, isn't it?
Do you know what? Newcastle did do a lot well in this game. Their midfield had so much energy and bite in it, and they won the ball back high up the pitch very, very often. Guimaraes is, like you say, I cannot believe he's at Newcastle. He's so good. He should be in the Champions League already comfortably, and maybe the aim is to get Newcastle there. But yeah, he looked fantastic. Newcastle, all of a sudden, the stark difference between them now and under Steve Bruce is that they just run so much more. they're willing to fight a lot more. And I do think that comes from the inspiration of the manager. I will say in this game, I don't know how well Newcastle played. All I know is how badly Brentford defended. And they just handed Newcastle 4 goals, really. They were so poor. They didn't look organised. They looked panicked. And all right, half of that is down to the constant pressure that they were under from the likes of Guimaraes, Almiron. They played really well, impressing them at the front. But if in the Premier League you make mistakes like that, even a team like Newcastle, who are sort of, we'll say mid-table, maybe top eight if they push, they'll punish you. And Brentford really should know better than that by now. It was really poor display from them, I thought, more than anything.
Yeah. Dave, Bruno Guimaraes got a standing ovation as he came off from the Newcastle fans, and rightly so. He played brilliantly. Like Miles said, though, there was an element of him having the space to do that as well. But this Newcastle team, are they going to be good enough to keep a player like him in the next couple of seasons? That'll be the test, won't it? Can they finish as highly as warrants having a player like Guimaraes in their team?
Like we've seen teams in the past when obviously City were on the rise, some of the players that they turned over, they managed to get the right sort of players in eventually. I mean, it's not going to be something that's going to change overnight. It might take them 10 years to get into the Champions League just because of how good teams are and how competitive this league is now. So they might struggle to keep hold of them, I'm going to be honest. I think there will be a couple of clubs that will probably have an eye on him, unless they can make some kind of rapid ascendancy, which I just can't see, to be honest, because it takes a lot more now. The game's changed. There's so much money throughout, Europe, especially in the Premier League, the amount of money that teams are getting. It takes a lot more than a state to buy a club to all of a sudden attract all these sort of players, because, one, Newcastle aren't in the Champions League. Yes, they're a big club, but I just don't think money attracts players like it once did, because there's so many clubs now that can offer you that. As we've seen with the rest of Europe, the likes of PSG, Barcelona, what they're doing, ridiculous. And just some of the big powerhouses that are there that can attract those players. So you'd find it strange to see why a big, a big talent would go to the likes of Newcastle over one of the bigger clubs in Europe. And we're seeing it happen over and over at the minute. The big talents are going to the big clubs. They're not going, Isak's the exception, but I think there is better forward players than him around. That might be the route that they're looking at, is potentially looking at talent to really kind of try and get there. It might get to the point where they are having to sell those players eventually, but if it can get them to Champions League, if they're picking up a couple of elite talents.
I hate to backtrack a little bit, but doesn't Guimaraes look like he would be the perfect answer to a lot of Liverpool's problems?
Very true, yeah.
That intensity, how good he is on the ball, the strength he has in midfield, his versatility in midfield, because he can play as a 6 or a 10.
I think Newcastle's limits this season are kind of a lot higher than I expected now, because there's so many teams in and around 6th to 10th that are kind of in a bit of transition as well. So some of the ones that I predicted to finish in that area higher than Newcastle were West Ham. They look a little bit more inconsistent than they have done in recent years. Leicester have gone obviously to the bottom of the league now. So there is a space for them as the best of the rest. And I think that's probably where they're going to finish around this season. I mean, even the likes of Brentford, after a defeat like this, they're still, I think, 11th in the table. So the quality in that midsection of the Premier League is so close that I don't think it'd take much to stretch ahead of those teams. Don't you agree?
I think it's really bad. Honestly, the amount of games I watched this weekend where sloppy goals were given away by terrible defending, I just thought the quality was so abject. And then I watched Man City, for example, and I watched Arsenal, and I thought, okay, good, there are some footballing teams. Like I said, Villa are awful right now. I'll be totally honest with you. I hate watching them. I think they're terrible. The last two games have been the worst two games of football I've watched in a long time. We're playing Forest today, who have also been awful. If Villa win, they go into the top half.
Yeah.
How are Villa good enough to be in the top half right now? It's a joke.
Well, even Bournemouth, again, they've beaten Leicester, but they've climbed to 8.
They're doing all right.
Yeah, so again, it doesn't take much at the moment. I know it's early days, but it doesn't take much to string a few wins together to kind of climb the table. So that's why I think Newcastle might stay there. They had a shaky start to the season, but I can't see them struggling necessarily against teams in and around them. I think they're better. And I think Eddie Howe's proven himself to be a pretty flexible coach as well. Dave, I want to pick your brains on United if we can move on to the next game. United beating Everton, coming from behind as well. Casemiro making a mistake to give them a goal quite early on, but then recovering to produce a man of the match performance. Cristiano Ronaldo gets his 700th goal. So there's quite a few headlines there for United fans. Are you happy with what you saw, mate?
Step in the right direction. I think what is encouraging at the moment is any sort of steps back that we are taking. We are recovering from these moments. You looked at, obviously, the Europa League and the week, not a good performance at all. We got the game, obviously, won. But this was an encouraging performance for me, in that there were players that obviously came back into the team. Luke Shaw, for me, potentially probably could have been man of the match. Casemiro came in, one of his, definitely probably his best performance for United so far, albeit obviously started the game quite sloppily, obviously gifting that opportunity to Everton, which they scored from. Yeah, the first goal, obviously the goal that Everton scored, it was a brilliant finish from Iwobi. I feel like even though Casemiro did go the ball as sloppily as he did, we should have been closing that ball down on the edge of the box, and we didn't. We invited him to shoot, and that put us on the back foot. And straight away then I was like, here we go again. But our response was, you know, really encouraging. Yeah. Everton just couldn't keep hold of the ball. That was one of the things for me, is that our possession was, you know, great to see. Eriksen was on his game. And a lot of the players, especially the new signings, you can't really argue with a lot of what we've seen. Obviously, I know Malacia came out of the team because he's had a couple of off games against City and Ammonia Nicosia in the week, where he obviously made a mistake. But we've seen positives from him. Lisandro Martinez just looks a revelation every single game. On the ball, he's got to be. I think he's the best ball playing defender in the league. How he plays is, you know, it gives a different dimension. He's able to play the ball into, obviously, in between those lines, get the ball into the midfield, which we've really struggled to do in the past. And Antony, obviously, three goals in three Premier League games.
When a Premier League goalkeeper is going to work out that he's left-footed and stop closing down his right foot? Pickford did exactly what Ramsdale did, and he just left in the whole goal. He just kept running over as if he was going to take out his right foot. Couldn't work that out.
How did you find the game, Miles? What was your opinion on United? Obviously, Ronaldo took the headlines coming on and scoring such a landmark goal. But like Dave said, there are a few players that kind of caught the eye, Antony being one of them. And they needed a response, didn't they, really, after last weekend?
They did, and after midweek, because take the win aside, yeah, they were not good. And that's a team they should be absolutely tearing apart. And they got very lucky, really, to get the win in the end. And then even then, when they were 3-1 up, they invited them back into the game. So this was a really important win. Everton had the best defence in the league going into this game. And you've scored twice, which is good. Even when you've had that setback at the start, which, all right, Casemiro gives the ball away. But a lot has to happen between that and Iwobi hitting that ball. Like Dave says, United should have done better. But there were some real positives there. The Ronaldo situation, I think, is really interesting. He comes on, plays very well, actually. He led the forward line really, really well. He actually was pressing, he was running, he was good energy, scored his goal. This is a huge moment for him. And Ronaldo, of the last few years, you see him run off, on his own. And instead, he's out there celebrating with Rashford, celebrating with Antony. He looks a lot calmer in the moment than I think I anticipated him. And I do wonder what this current setup and having Ten Hag there and being on the bench as often as he is doing to him personally, where this massive achievement, 700 for CR7, you would have thought that was pulling out all the stops. And actually, he just kind of didn't look that bothered by it.
I think the response from the United players as well in the dressing room afterwards, there's a photo of them all. I don't know if you've seen it, with balloons behind them with 700 on, and just a massive sort of celebration from the team. And that's nice to see, because for all the talk of dressing room rift, it's good to see that actually they've got his back and they had something like this ready for this kind of occasion. Did feel almost inevitable. I think Lampard even said it in the post-match that it was going to be scored in this particular game, really. But I thought he looked determined to kind of get that monkey off his back and reach that landmark. And he showed, he looked like a bit of a breath of fresh air for United when he came on.
It's the first time I think I've seen him look relieved in a way. It almost, yeah, like you mentioned, it looked like it was a weight off his shoulders. And I don't know whether it's crazy to say, but almost like he was lacking a bit of confidence, probably. You know, headlines saying that, you know, he's not for United, he's not the right, he doesn't suit this system, he's not obviously what he was. It's got to play on your mind as a player, even, you know, the unreal players, you know. The frustrating for me is that Martial obviously started the game, looked really well, went off injured again. It seems to be a recurring problem with him, obviously got an assist as well. But now, obviously, we're back to having only one real striker in Ronaldo. Now Martial's injured again. So that's another thing we need to address in January. If not, you know, if we're not going to address it in January, then, you know, next summer we will need another striker. 5 wins in 6 games in our last 6 Premier League games.
Before we leave, I want to touch on hero, villain and goal of the week, which I think might spark a bit of chat from you guys as well. So for my hero of the week, I've actually gone for Bukayo Saka. Just because of the mental strength to take that winning penalty for Arsenal after the kind of way he missed the penalty, obviously, in the Euros final. And the kind of confidence it would take to do that. He must have had it in the back of his mind, you know, if I miss this, I'm going to be absolutely mortified. But he put it away brilliantly. And I thought he played great as well. So, yeah, Saka, for me, I think deserves the plaudits this week.
You can't begrudge Saka anything. I thought you might pick Ronaldo this week, to be honest, because that achievement is... I think it's really worth recognising. I know we've just talked about it a bit, but I read a stat and I'm sure the majority of people will have seen because it's circulating. But Haaland, if he plays till he's 38, to catch Ronaldo, will have to score 43 goals a season from now on, every season.
Just that is some illustration of the achievement, really, isn't it?
So good. And look, to be fair, Haaland's got 20 this season already, so he might go on and get 100 this season and all of a sudden it becomes a bit easier. But I just... To hit 700 career goals in club football, and it's unbelievable, that is.
Yeah, and I think for villain of the week, I want to get everybody's take on this as well, because VAR, like, what the hell's going on this season? What's going on this week? We've had so much inconsistency with decisions on penalties and handballs and not handballs. When you see Mikel Antonio pretty much volleyballing the ball into his own path, scoring, and then it gets
so
allowed. And then you see Marcus Rashford is disallowed for what felt like a ricochet that he couldn't avoid. Dave, what the hell was that all about? You were fuming about the Rashford decision, but VAR, what's going on, mate?
I don't even know if the ball actually touched his arm. It wasn't clear cut that the ball actually even brushed his arm. So I don't know how this was clear and obvious to cancel out a perfectly good goal for me.
That Antonio one didn't even seem to be properly mentioned. There was a lot of talk about Scamacca's goal and whether that was a handball. And actually, everyone seemed to think that, even Scamacca thought that was a handball and it was still given. He didn't even celebrate. Everyone else was celebrating. He was going, that's going to be disallowed, that. Because it really clearly hit his hand. And the penalties. Yeah. Dan Burns has given us a penalty, which, yeah, we said earlier, that it is a penalty, I think. I know he's got his back to the ball, but your arm doesn't need to be up here when you jump in. I know they talk a lot about natural position and you don't jump with your arms like this, but I don't know why you jump like this either, to be honest. But Gabriel's then has to be given two, surely. It was a bit of a mess this weekend.
Yeah, not amazing. And another rubbish weekend for VAR. So yeah, that one's consigned to the bin this week. Goal of the week was a little bit more difficult to choose, but I've gone with Phil Foden's finish. Cancelo could have took it as well, I think. But Foden, for me, the way he brings the ball down under control, his speed of thought as well is so quick. Like, his brain's moving so fast, much faster than everyone else's. And then to manoeuvre himself to almost chip and dink it into the corner was just beautiful technique. I think Foden's such a quality player anyway, but the way he's playing this season is just world class so far.
I probably disagree with you. I think Cancelo's goal was just phenomenal. But I can see why you...
I think I just want to reward Foden for the way he's kind of gone under the limelight a little bit, really, with Haaland, especially against United. Mm. I think he should have been the standout headline player, but Haaland's just so good. Mm. So yeah, it's his turn for the limelight, I think, this time around. So yeah, fair play to Phil Foden. But yeah, just to finish, I just want to reiterate what we say every single week now. Please do support us with our growth. Miles, why should they tune in? Why should they subscribe to the Football Diary podcast, mate?
I liked it the other day. Someone described it to me as, you're not just lads that talk like you're on TalkSport. You actually do some research into it and we learn quite a lot. So that was a nice way of hearing it. So if you're bored of TalkSport and Jamie O'Hara and Gabby or come and listen to experts like me, Mike and Dave. And
I'm using that quote. Dave, why should people tune in? Why should people watch this particular channel, mate? Thanks.
Why should we watch this? Don't know. We don't like Liverpool.
Yeah, if you don't like Liverpool, then you'll fit in well here.
That's just alienated thousands of fans, Dave. Cheers for that.
Why should we watch this?
Anyway, on that note, that's the trailer for the channel absolutely ruined. Thanks for tuning in anyway. Liverpool fans are included in that. Thank you for joining us. Miles and Dave, thanks for helping me out again once again. And we'll see you next week. Thanks a lot, guys. See you later.